This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a musical ride on the rails, a mind-bending audio trip, or a visit from the Almighty, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. If you loved to ride the miniature train in City Park as a child, a new tour is sure to attract you and your family back to the rails. Costumed singing actors are ready to take you on an adventure aboard the Friends of City Park's historical musical train tour, which opens this weekend. It's a tricentennial event with theatrics and historical facts set to a catchy original score. Friends of City Park Executive Director Casey Duplashane joins us with music producer Morgan Thielen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How was the idea for this adventure born?
Well, Friends of City Park, about 4 years ago, we started doing these smaller walking tours called our City Peak Tours to kind of help engage our members and educate them about different areas of the park. And also to help communicate to the public that the park does generate 90% of its own operating budget and receives no funding from the city and very little from the state. And so we were just trying to think of educational tools to be able to expose the community a little bit more about how special and unique the park is and why it's important to support the park. And so about a year ago, we came up with the idea of kind of expanding and developing a tour that's more engaging, entertaining, to be able to kind of appeal to the masses a little bit more.
So how does the park's history come alive in this interactive journey?
The tour is run with three tour guides. The audience sits on the train, and we really go through the different exciting things about the park that are along the rails, but also the overall history of the park. The tour guides get off and sing this wonderful music that Paul Soniat developed, just from the Mississippi River being a part of that Bayou Metairie Lagoon a long time ago, the different critters in the park.
Bees, honeybees, June bugs, and more crickets.
Spiders,
leafhoppers, and those darn mosquitoes.
Now, this was a labor of love for self-taught pianist Paul Soniat, a native son who is also the director of City Park's Botanical Garden. Morgan, he composed the original score. Tell us about the music and what it was like working with Paul.
He's an amazing songwriter and a really nice guy. We took his songs that he wrote and turned them into big musical pieces, much more dramatic and theatrical.
So what is the timeline being explored through song?
So Bayou Metairie, which is the first number, we're in the first stop on the tour, and it's about how Bayou Metairie used to be connected to the Mississippi River back in, I think, 1 AD. So we're talking many, 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 many years ago.
Way back.
Yeah.
There's a line that says, 1000 BC, the Mississippi flowed through me. So I think that's the earliest.
Yeah.
The earliest time, 1000 BC.
1000 BC, uh-huh. Wow. And you bring us forward. Tell us about some of the other songs. I believe there's one about critters.
It's actually my favorite. It lists all the common animals in the park. It turns out the birding community and the amount of migratory birds and birds that live there, it's huge, City Park. Mm-hmm. So if you're into birding, you should definitely go to City Park. But it's a country bluegrass style song where we go through the different mammals, the different fish, the different reptiles, amphibians, bugs, and birds.
Let's play Did You Know? What are some other fun facts that we're likely to learn, and what are the songs that are connected to the fact?
Peristyle is one of the songs as well, and that was built in 1907 as a dancing arena. That's the big column infrastructure that's kind of by the Morning Call area. In the script, we talk about the acquiring of the land from John McDonough. When he passed away, he willed to the city for the Children of New Orleans, and then it became a park. And that was in the late 1800s. And then we also talk about segregation in the park.
But in the days of old Jim Crow, some couldn't get in, for the color of their skin. Glad those days, they're gone. This park is for all.
Park for All, which is a really beautiful piece. We also talk about the New Orleans Museum of Art, and that's kind of a fun little piece. It's called Hey Haught, Let's Go See Some Art. It talks about when Lelong was built, the street that leads up to NoMa, and also Isaac Delgado, who built the museum in 1911.
I have a fun fact about Hey Haught, actually, that I learned when we were working on the song. there's a line about King Tut being there. Mm-hmm. And so the King Tut exhibit traveled to New Orleans in the 1970s and was here for a while. And it was very popular, and there was a line out the door every day. I was doing some research on it because I didn't realize what a big deal it was at the time. And when the exhibit left the museum, New Orleans had a second line jazz funeral for King Tut in the exhibit.
This is such awesome.
A New Orleans thing. It's lovely.
Yeah. Two big events kind of shaped the park, Hurricane Katrina and then the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. And a lot of the roads, the bridges, lagoons were built. They actually dug a lot of the lagoons with shovels by hand because the whole point of it was to employ people and to be able to help the economy. And so Tad Gormley was built. A lot of the art within the park, statues and so forth, and benches and water fountains, the old cement ones that you'll see, was all through the WPA. Roosevelt actually came down at the end in Roosevelt Mall, which is the stretch of road from Noma all the way to the cul-de-sac. That was named after him, and he kind of rode down that. There's this amazing picture of him in his car speaking, driving down Roosevelt Mall. It's really cool.
What is your hope as this family-friendly trek through the park brings history to life for a new generation of passengers?
I hope that it makes people fall in love with the park, maybe for the first time, or if not for the first time, to fall in love all over again.
Friends of City Park Executive Director Casey Duplashane and music producer Morgan Thielen, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Anne.
So come on, come on, come on.
Come on, come on, come on.
Take a little ride on the City Park train. All aboard for the City Park train.
You can experience the Friends of City Park's historical musical train tour as the grand opening kicks off in the Carousel Gardens Amusement Park on Friday, May 11th. More info at friendsofcitypark.com. The historical musical train tour runs through fall 2018. Internationally acclaimed composer Yotam Haber will make a sound statement as Southern Sonic, a sound art and experimental music festival, kicks off at the Contemporary Arts Center this weekend. Haber, a Guggenheim Fellow and Rome Prize winner in music composition, is an assistant professor of music at the University of New Orleans. He will premiere a scene from his first opera, The Voice Imitator, a work currently in progress. Yotam Haber is here, joined by his wife, artist Anna Haber, and Southern Sonic Festival co-curator Jebney Lewis. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
This new festival is an experience in experimental sounds. Jebney, let's begin with you. How did the Southern Sonic Festival come to be?
Sound art and experimental music, it's a form of creative art making that exists at the nexus of a lot of things. The festival spans everything from experimental Afrofuturist hip-hop to a presentation of new classical chamber pieces, to opera, to music made by drones that we're going to be flying inside the CAC space. There's some resonant sculptures. There's a gentleman who's making music using the biofeedback of his own body. It's a really broad spectrum of experimentation and sonic production.
And Yotam, this is an exciting time for you. This is your first opera. Tell us, what was your inspiration for The Voice Imitator?
This is based on an author and a book that I've slightly been obsessed with since I was a teenager. It's called The Voice Imitator. It's written by the Austrian writer Thomas Bernhard. He died in 1989, generally considered the most important post-war author in Austria, and had a very conflicted relationship with his own country. Something about his dark humor and his very unsentimental approach to history, his own history, his country's history, really strikes a resonant chord with me. And this collection of 104 short stories has been traveling with me, reading and rereading these crazy little stories. Each one fits on less than a page, sort of reportage. He used to be a criminal court reporter, and they sound a little bit like little bits taken from the news, very strange little stories, a little surreal, allegorical. And the scene that we're presenting at the CAC is about a voice imitator played in my opera by a coloratura soprano, Sarah Hershkowitz, coming in from Berlin. And she plays someone who is invited by a surgical society in Vienna to entertain the guests. She's asked to imitate various people. And at the end of the evening, the surgeons asked her, can she imitate herself? She's unable to do that. This story has sort of stuck in my craw for a long time, and I keep changing my mind on what that story means to me about this inability to replicate yourself.
Take us through the experience. What will we hear?
This opera, when it will be completed in its entirety, will be for a small chamber ensemble with about seven singers. This scene is only for coloratura soprano, the highest possible range that we hear on the opera stage. And electronics that I've composed with the assistance and collaboration of Brendan Connolly, a New Orleans-based composer and sound designer. The electronics are a manipulation of Sarah, of the soprano. There's a very personal relationship that I've fused in creating this piece. I asked Sarah, as a singer, what are the songs that you have been obsessed with your whole life? Every singer begins, in a way, by copying what they hear on the radio. I asked her to put together a list of these songs that she's spent her whole life imitating. And so the scene flips back and forth from these moments where the surgeons ask her to imitate iconic singers, Josephine Baker being one of them. And that she can do like a machine. She can imitate anyone. And then other moments, we recorded Sarah making gestures that are attempts at singing. All sorts of noises and gestures that are generally considered bad singing. Those, to me, somehow represent these moments when she's trying to replicate herself, when the surgeons ask her to do you. And when Sarah, the voice imitator, hears those moments on stage, she tries to replicate them but can't. And so the counterpoint that she makes with herself is going to be very different from those moments when she hears one of these iconic singers that she's loved her whole life. That's the musical element that we'll be hearing. And there's a visual component as well by Kiel Moe, an architect who will be building a sonic sculpture that exists on stage that Sarah, the voice imitator, will interact with. We see this mass on stage and we don't understand what role it's for until the very end of the opera, when we finally hear this mysterious object.
And Anna, you too are bringing a visual component to the piece.
Into the opera, I am creating a drawing of marks and paintings that happens through projection. So you as the audience member will at first not see anything. And then as the piece unfolds, I will be adding a set design that is ephemeral. It's temporal. It doesn't exist in space other than through the marks that we're projecting. It's a live drawing, channeled through digital media.
How are you hoping audiences will connect with this piece?
I think that there is different angles and ways of seeing the story. It leaves it open-ended, which is something that I love about music, the ambiguity of sound.
And Jebny, what will be the big takeaway from this new festival and its experiments with sound?
I feel like the engine of New Orleans music is about rolling new inputs into a really, really firm, amazing heritage. And what I hope is that the audiences come away having a deeper understanding of the true breadth of what's happening in their city musically.
Composer Yotam Haber, artist Anna Haber, and Southern Sonic Festival co-curator Jebny Lewis. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Which the voice imitator fulfilled most readily.
Southern Sonic, a sound art and experimental music festival, kicks off at the Contemporary Arts Center this weekend, running Thursday, May 10th through Sunday, May 13th. You can see a scene from Yotam Haber's opera, The Voice Imitator, on Sunday, 7:30 p.m. at the CAC. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Veteran actor and native son, Brian Batt, has played numerous roles on Broadway and TV. But his latest role may be the most challenging as he takes on the Almighty in David Javerbaum's An Act of God, opening this week at Le Petit Theater. Brian Batt is here. Welcome.
Bless you. Bless you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. You're glowing. Is that a halo?
Yes. Yes. I just plug it in and I go.
So tell me, are you intimidated by this role?
Yes. And not just because I'm playing God. That's intimidating enough. But it is the biggest role I have ever tackled. I mentioned this to my brother, and he's like, oh, come on, you've done, you know, these huge roles on Broadway and all this stuff. And I said, yeah, but there are other people. Now, granted, there are two other people in the show, wonderfully talented, Leon Contrevespri and Wendy Miklovic. But I have 30-something pages of dialogue, single-spaced, and I think they have one page between the two of them total. So it is, you know, and I'm of a certain age where I sometimes walk downstairs and go, why did I come down here? So the idea of having to memorize this is daunting. However, the writing is so funny and so good and so smart that really the challenge is a joy. And we are having far too much fun in rehearsal. We really are. It really is hysterical. I think the audience will get a big kick out of it.
Let's set the stage. How is the Almighty portrayed?
Well, the Almighty comes down through my body, through Brian Batt, to give his new commandments because, you know, he needs some tweaking. And they're hysterical. And I have Gabriel and Michael, my archangels, my wingmen, my genassistants, if thou shalt, to assist me. It's very funny. But it also explores the idea of God as a man, or as, like, we are all made in his image, according to the Bible. So what is it like with his son, with Jesus? What is that relationship? You know, I found myself in some of the rehearsals, I turned into my father talking to me when I said I wanted to be an actor. Are you out of your mind, son? Are you crazy? And God says it to Jesus. He goes, do you have any idea what it's like to be a physical human being? People hunger and thirst and sicken and age and tire. Oh, you know, that's a bad idea, Jesus. And then there's some really poignant moments with Abraham. And some of it's very, 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 very funny and very poignant. And I think people will enjoy it. It's an hour and a half. And it's smart. It's by David Javerbaum, who wrote The Daily Show. And he won like 13 Emmy Awards for that, which is unheard of. And it's that witty, clever humor. You have to think a little bit, but it also has this body side to it. I think all different audiences will enjoy it.
And his inspiration for this work, this was a series of tweets?
Yes, he started a Twitter account called The Tweets of God. And you can still see some of them. Some of them are quite funny. Then it became this huge phenomenon, this, you know, cult following. Then he wrote a book, a compilation of the tweets. This book was transformed. He wrote it into a play. And on Broadway originally, it was with Jim Parsons and then Sean Hayes from Will and Grace.
Is there a moment that you can share from the play?
Sure. Let's see. How about the sixth commandment? Thou shalt not take my name in vain. Well, that's another holdover from the original, but it's still true. I am many things to many people, and the true nature of my essence is ungraspable to human comprehension. But one thing I definitely am is a brand. I am an established, well-respected brand, okay? And when I see some backup wide receiver from Dipstick University on SportsCenter point to me after scoring a touchdown, it cheapens the brand. Okay, this one's simple. I'm not with you when your team wins. I'm not against you when your team loses. I'm not with or against you when you win or lose. I am not a Laker, a Cowboy, or a Pirate. And listen carefully, I am not a Falcon. I don't guide the ball between the uprights or into the basket or out of the stadium or into your opponent's crotch. You won the game? Congratulations. Your Super Bowl MVP? Mazel tov. World Cup champion? Wunderbar, but leave me out of it. Because your piety, or lack thereof, either as an athlete, a team, or a fan base, is meaningless to me. I do not influence the outcome of sporting events to affect the winner. Are we clear? I only, on extremely rare occasions, influence the outcome of sporting events to affect the spread.
You've got some pretty big shoes to fill.
I know, right? And that's just one paragraph. But it goes everywhere. It really does. One of my favorite lines is, you know, Lord, why do bad things happen to good people? And I say, to even out the good things that happen to bad people. Duh.
Well, Brian, will we question the Bible or our interpretation of it after seeing this production?
I hope not. But I do hope that you'll take away some levity. God obviously has a sense of humor. You know, look at us. Really. So I think, you know, it celebrates, if anything. You know, people will take away that, you know, all we really know on this earth is that, you know, we have to look to ourselves sometimes, and we have to really take care of each other, and we have to trust ourselves just as much as we trust the Almighty. A lot of this comes from within.
Veteran actor and New Orleans native Brian Batt, thanks so much.
Anytime.
David Javerbaum's An Act of God, directed by Max Williams and starring Brian Batt, runs May 11th through 27th at Le Petit Theatre, 616 St. Peter Street. More info is online at lepetittheatre.com. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.